We are holding on Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph top line.
Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph?
Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph top line, yeah. Okay, so we were discussing yesterday the matter of Klei Cheres and the various size holes that they might have and what implications that has as far as Dini Terumah V'Tumah. So we're holding Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph top line. We were discussing yesterday about Klei Cheres. We said that there are five. Rava had said that there are that when it comes to Klei Cheres, there are five sizes of holes that would make a difference. You have a hole that's big enough for liquid to leak out of, a hole that's a little bit bigger where liquid can leak in, meaning if you put the keli on the surface of the water, then water will leak in through the hole. You have the size of a small root. You have the size where olives will fall out, and the size where pomegranates will fall out. And each one of them has different dinim as far as whether it's still considered a keli or whether you can be machshir, whether plants that are growing in such a flower pot are able to be machshir the kabel tumah, or are they considered attached to the ground and therefore not. Or are you able to use it to mix part adrumal water, etc. But now continuing on that topic, Amar Rav Asi, Shoinin, the people who learn Braises in the yeshivas, they say Klei Cheres she'ore b'koynes mashke, the amount for a Klei Cheres that makes it that no longer a keli is when liquid can enter. Meaning, in other words, this is basically similar to what Rava had said before. Rava had said that of the first one of these kinds of holes, we said the first kind is where liquid will leak out of the container, and we said it still is considered a Klei Cheres. It still is considered a Klei Cheres in the sense, it still is considered a keli in the sense that you could use it to mix part adrumah water, which has to be done in a keli, but not in all of mayim chayim al keli. The only thing is that if it was a gistera, if it was a broken piece of cheres, which you're using anyway only as to put underneath another keli that has a leak in it, then once it has even a small hole like that, then it no longer has the truma of gistera. So Rav Asi is saying the same thing, basically, that the people who learn braises say, Klei Cheres she'ore b'koynes mashke, the shear for it to no longer be considered a Klei Cheres is once liquid will leak in. This that we say that there's a difference in status between when there's no hole at all versus when there's a hole small enough for liquid to leak out is only in connection with the din of gistera. Only with this din that if you have a broken piece of cheres, if you have a broken piece of earthenware, that it's still makabel tuma on the ground that you can put it under another keli, under another more or less intact keli that has a small hole in order to catch the overflow. My time. Now, why would that be? Why would a gistera be no longer makabel tuma even if it has the tiniest hole that liquid can leak out of? Because nobody says if this gistera is broken, let's put another gistera underneath it that will catch the drippings from the first one. You'll just throw away the first one and use the second one instead. So that being the case, then once it has that small hole where liquid can leak out of it, then it no longer has a function at all. It was a broken piece to begin with. The only reason you were keeping it around was to catch the drippings from another keli. Once it itself has a hole and liquid is dripping out of it, then you have no reason to keep it around at all. As opposed to, Rashi says, when it's a whole keli, then a tiny hole is not going to, the fact that it has a tiny hole and liquid leaks out is not going to make you throw away the keli. You'll just put a gistera underneath it. But you're not going to put one gistera under another gistera. Okay. More on this topic. Oma Ola, Pligiva Trey Amiroi B'ma Robber, Rav Yesi B'Rav Oven, Rav Yesi B'Barzavda. Ola tells us that in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, which is west of Bavel, there are two Amiroyim who argue on the question of Hechsher Zroyim. So we discussed yesterday that according to Rav Shimon, we would say that, according to Rav Shimon, we would say that generally speaking, a plant that's in a flower pot is considered detached from the ground. Therefore, we said in our Mishnah, Rav Shimon would say that if you pull it out of the pot, then you're only over on Issa Drabanan, according to him, whether the pot has a hole or not. On the other hand, we said, as far as Hechsher Zroyim, do we consider the plant to be attached to the ground? There we make that distinction. We say that if it has a hole, We say that if it has a hole, then we would say then he would consider it attached to the ground, and that it wouldn't be moshal kavol tumah. As long as in some way it can be considered connected to the ground through the hole, then we said that you can't be moshal kavol tumah. So that's the thing. We said according to Reb Shimon, whether it has a hole or not, as far as Shabbos is potter, as far as other dinim, where it depends whether it's considered karka or not, also, Reb Shimon would say it's not considered karka. You can't use it as a basis for writing a peruz bowl. If you want to buy it, the plant from somebody else, you have to do mashicha. You have to do mashicha of the flower pot rather than just buy it the kesef as you would land. Only when it comes to hechsher zroim, only then would we say that there's a difference whether it has a hole or not. That's we said. We said according to Reb Shimon. Now we're talking according to the Chachamim. We said before in Rava's list of five things, we said that at what point is it not considered a keli in the sense that the plants in it cannot be mukshal the kabel tumah if they become wet. We said that that would be when you have a hole in it large enough for a small root. So now, this that Rava had said as a given, that it's a, welcome back. This that Rava had said that when it has a hole large enough for a small root, at that point you can't be machshir the kabel tumah, the plants that are growing inside it. So Ola says that actually two Amoraim disagree on that. One says that the size is once it has a hole large enough for pomegranates to fall out of, and the other one says when it has a hole the size of a small root. So one of them, in other words, is agreeing with Rava, and the other one is disagreeing with Rava and saying you need a much larger hole according to Chachamim before the dirt in the pot will have the din of the ground, and therefore that the plant is considered as if it was rooted in the ground. You'll need a much larger hole, the size of a pomegranate, in order to have that. Now this is not considered a flower pot anymore, but rather this is considered a plant that's actually attached to the ground, and therefore that hechshel the kabel tumah has no effect, just like it doesn't on any plant that's attached to the ground. Yeah. This is how Rashi means that the machlokes is as far as that. Tosfos says that no, there's actually a Mishnah in the Masechta Uktim that mentions the amount of a small root. So how could any of the Amoraim be disagreeing with that? They can't argue with the Mishnah. So Tosfos says, rather, the Machlokes is about something else that we mentioned yesterday, about somid posel. We said, if you have a kli cheres that has a cover on it that's tightly sealed and attached to the keli, then the din is that the content, the keli itself, and any of the content in it remains tahor, even if it's in an oil mess. We said that if there's a hole on the side of it, the Rashi learned that if there's a hole on the side of it, then the tumah cannot come in through the hole unless that hole is a certain minimum size. We ended up saying yesterday it would depend whether it was a large or a small keli. If it's a large keli, then according to Rashi, the hole has to be the majority of the size of the keli. And if it's a small one, it has to be the size of a pomegranate. The size of the pomegranate will fall out. Then at that point, tumah can come in through the hole. Tosfos, we said yesterday, has a number of differences with Rashi on that, one of them being that tumah can come in through the hole, and the question is whether you need somid posel on the hole itself. And in addition, Tosfos flips around the definitions of the size of the hole for large and small ones, but whatever. The point is that, so now, according to Tosfos, Rabbi Yossi Bar Oven and Rabbi Yossi Bar Zavda are arguing on that. If you have a keli, if you have a kli cheres where the top of it is stoppered shut, but you have a hole in it, you have a hole on the side of it, what's the size of that hole that you need to have before, according to Rashi, tumah will come into it and be metame what's inside the keli, or according to Tosfos, that the hole itself needs to be sealed up. So one is saying the size of a small root, and the other one is saying the size of a pomegranate. The Gemara says the simonach, the simon to remember that you shouldn't think either of them thinks it's the one in between, the size of an olive, is remember the expression in the Mishnah at the end of Menachos, echad amarbe ve'echad amam. If the Mishnah says over there whether a person does a lot or a little, then either way Hashem appreciates it as long as he does it with kavana. So therefore, this will help you remember that you have a machlokes over here where one says the maximum, which is the size of a pomegranate, and the other one says the minimum, which is the size of a small root. meaning the first two size holes that Rava talked about, the size for liquid to leak out or the size for liquid to leak in, those definitely have no implication as far as Hechsher Zroim, because there's no reason to think that such a small hole would allow the plant to get any nourishment from the ground. So within the next three sizes of holes, the size of a small root, the size of an olive, or the size of a pomegranate, we should remember that neither of these Amiroim take the middle view, because Echad Amar of Echad Amami. One does a little and one does a lot, and one does the maximum, one does the minimum. So that helps you remember that machoikas, that none of them think that it's the size of an olive.
Either the
largest or the smallest. Yeah. Okay. More on this topic. Omer of Chinina Bakahana Mishmeid Rabbi Yezer. Kli cheres shiure ken moitzi zeisim. The shiur for kli cheres, that it's not makabel tumor anymore, is when it's large enough for olives to fall out of it. Which we said yesterday, Rashi had said that, if afterwards you redesignate it, that you're going to use it to hold pomegranates, or if to begin with it was meant to hold pomegranates, then it would be a larger amount, then it would be only when it has a pomegranate size hole. So now, Rabbi Chinina Bar Kahana is saying that actually, no, it's always when it has a hole the size that olives will fall out of it, then it's not makabel tumah anymore. And so that was what Rav Chinina Bar Kahana had said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, Makshisha, in the name, the son of Rava, continues also in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Once this keli has a hole that size that olives will fall out of it, then it's like kalim that are made out of glolim, which we learned in the first parak of our Masechta, means that they're made out of marble, as Rashi explained over there, or it means animal dung. Either way, such kalim are not makabel tumah, or clay avonim, or kalim made out of stone, or clay adama, or kalim that are made out of unfired earth, which all of those, shame makabel tumah, let me give a table, let me give a statement. None of those kalim are makabel tumah, either daraisa or darabanan, that he wants us to know, Makshisha wants us to know, also in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, that the same thing is true of a kli cheres that has a hole large enough for an olive to fall out. Meaning, Tosfos says he's arguing with Rava. Rava had said that you could still redesignate the keli for pomegranate, so you could have to begin with it was designated for pomegranate, and then you need a larger hole for it to not be makabel tumah. He's saying that, no, it's always the size of olives. Of olives. Once olives will fall out of it, then it's not makabel tumah anymore. Now Rashi refers us to a Mishnah in the Masechta Kelim that says kol klei balibasim shiurim kirimonim, that the size is in fact the size of pomegranates, that when it has a pomegranate size hole, then it's makabel tumah. Up until the time it has a pomegranate size hole, it's makabel tumah. Rashi says that's referring, according to this, to wooden kelim. Klei cheres are less important. So once a kli cheres has a hole the size of an olive, a person will just throw it away, or maybe at most still use it as a gistera. As opposed to wooden kalim, are more expensive or more important or whatever, and therefore a person will keep it around even when it has a hole the size of an olive and keep it around in order to store pomegranates in it.
Even though the wooden thing, once it has holes, it's useless, but the clay cheres can melt it down and make something.
Clay cheres can't melt down. No, you have to bread. The only way it's earthenware. You can't melt it down.
A wood one,
you could put a flog in. Well, I mean, a clay cheres, I suppose you could also put a flog in. But you have a concept with clay cheres called kibin shatara shar achas shuv emay tumah la'olam. And in many cases, we say that once a clay cheres becomes no longer able to be makabel tumah, then even if it gets fixed or whatever, it's not able to be makabel tumah in the future as well. So this would be an example of that. And then he continues, in him, summid posel, adshi pachas yorbo. Now, on the other hand, as far as this matter of summid posel that we were saying before, that if you have a sealed free cheres in an oil ames, that we said that then the tumor is able to come in through the hole, even though it's open, according to Rashi, or according to Tosfos, that the hole itself needs to be sealed up with summid posel, and then that blocks the tumor from coming in, that would apply until most of the surface of the keli is broken away. Once you have that, then according to Rashi, that's now considered the opening of the keli. Therefore, tumah can come in through that. And according to Tosfos, at that point, putting a summit posel on it won't help because it's not a keli anymore. And the concept of summit posel applies only to kelim.
So if it's open and bigger than one, it's still going to be considered.
It's still considered. According to Rashi, then the tumah still will not come in through that hole because the mouth of the keli is closed and the tumah can only come in through the mouth. According to Tosfos, tumor will come in through that hole, excuse me, unless the hole is sealed shut. But the point is, if the hole gets to be too large, if it's the ovary, then even sealing it up won't help, and the content and the content, the Kaylee itself, is now no longer macabre tumor anyway, because it's not broken more than half, but the content of it will become tumor. Okay. Hadron alacha matniyah. Okay. Now we're going to get back to matters involving chitzav achnasa. This is the last parak where we're going to be dealing with this in a concentrated way. So in this parak, actually, we're going to be revisiting quite a few things that we already learned in the first parak. So the Mishnah says, Hazorik me'rshut yachad l'rshut rabim. If a person throws something from rshut yachad to rshut rabim, or me'rshut rabim l'rshut yachad, then he's chayev. Even though, now we have to consider, throwing is not the same thing as carrying, because you yourself are not going along with the thing. And nevertheless, we're still saying that he's chayev, as we'll see in the Gemara. Now, what we do have to see is, in the Gemara, we learned all the way back at the beginning of the Masechta, Tosfos pointed out that Hotzah is a malacha grua. It's a very weakish kind of malacha, because really, if you didn't have something in the Torah that implies that it's a malacha, you would never have thought that it's a malacha. Every other malacha, you're changing the item, you're making some kind of change to the item that you're doing malacha on, whereas over here, Haitzah or Achnasa, you're just bringing it from point A to point B. So therefore, with the malacha of Haitzah, more than with any other malacha, we need explicit sources in the Torah that it's considered a malacha. So we have when you consider it, there's three ways of getting something from one place to another. There's hashah, there's actually carrying it in your hand or whatever. There's hashata, which is handing it over from one place to another. Like you have, as the mission is going to continue, an example where you have porches, let's say. You have porches and you take something and hand it across from one porch to the other. And then you have throwing it. So all three of those are also what we're going to see in what ways those are similar and in what ways those are different.
I think that the portions of the Rei Hayav also has that probably different than...
Ah, that's what we're going to talk about. Okay. So far the Mishnah is just talking about a plain old case where you have, let's say, a Rosh Hashanah on the ground, a Rosh Hashanah on the ground, and you throw something from one to the other. And by the way, it's also, of course, if a person throws something or carries something for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. The Baal Amor actually, interestingly, explains that there's a connection between those, because you have a concept, a person's four amos around him in Rishus Rabim are considered to a certain extent his Rishus. A person can be koine in those four amos, for example. Therefore, when he carries outside four amos in Rishus Rabim, what it amounts to is he's carrying from his temporary Rishus over there into some other Rishus. Okay. What happens? A person carries something from one, or throws from one Rishus Yachid to a different one, but there's a Rishus Rabim in the middle. So imagine you have a person takes something from one house and throws it across the Rishus Rabim into the other house. Rav Akiva Machayev, Acham Potter. Rav Akiva says he's Chayev, the Chum says Potter, for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara later on in Daftar Zayin. Okay, case that, the Mishnah says. So what is the scenario we're talking about over here? If you have two porches across from each other in Rosh Hashanah, now the porches we're talking about, Rashi mentions the point that they're made, you have projections sticking out of the wall, and then you have boards placed on top of those projections to form the porches. The point is that Rashi does not seem to mention anything about there being a fence around the porches. So actually, you have the Tzemach Tzedek gets into an interesting discussion. In what sense would those porches be considered Rishus HaYachid? Fine, they're 10 tefachim off the ground, but so what? You have there's nothing between them and the ground. It's called Gedolim Boikim. So how can you? So in what sense can they be considered to have walls to be a Rishus HaYachid?
But the porches are on the ground.
No, the porches are more than 10 tefachim off the ground. But in other words, the implication is there's nothing supporting them from the ground. They're just lying on projections that come off the wall. You have like think of when you put up shelves in your house or something. You know, you have these brackets that you have sticking out of the wall, and then you put a board on top of it for a shelf. So this is similar. You have brackets sticking out of the wall, and you have boards placed on top of them to form the porch. So some aesthetic discusses the possibility, maybe Taka, only because they're attached to the house, and therefore the wall of the house is one wall of theirs. Maybe that's enough for them to be considered a Rishus HaYachid.
Mentioned being
boy, right? Because he could
stick their head up.
Means that a goat could walk underneath it. in general, we say when it comes to mechitzas, if a mechitza is more than 3 tefachim off the ground, most of the time it doesn't count as a mechitza because gdolim breaking bread, because 3 tefachim is enough for goats to be able to walk through, or to, at least to be able to crawl through or whatever, then therefore it's not considered a mechitza.
And it's not good.
You're talking about, for example, in Sukkah, when it talks about when you're building the walls, yeah, same idea. If the walls are 3 tefachim off the ground, then it's going both in right. You have the opinion of Rav Yossi who disagrees and says it doesn't matter. We'll learn about that whole topic in Erev Investishem, but yeah.
If it's above, so that helps out the point that it's a separate reshus.
So the fact that it's 10 tefachim off the ground, on the face of it, makes it a separate reshus. But the Tzemach Tzedek is dealing with the issue, why indeed should it be a separate reshus if it has no mechitzes? And there's nothing to say good asik or good achis or whatever. On the face of it, maybe it should be considered a panelist or something. It doesn't have walls. It doesn't really fit the definition of Rishus Yochid. He says maybe the fact that it has a wall of a house on one side of it is enough to make, and the wall goes all the way to the ground, is enough to make it Rishus Yochid.
We learned about this as sticking out into the Rishus. It hasn't had walls and water.
Well, it has some kind of walls, actually, again. Okay. Fine. So you have these two porches, one across the street from the other, Rishus HaRabim, HaMoshit VaHazordet, Mezulazu Potter. If a person hands something across from one porch to the other, or he throws something across from one porch to the other, he's going to be Potter because he's going over Rishus HaRabim higher than 10 Tefachim. And higher than 10 Tefachim, Rishus HaRabim is Makom Ptur. On the other hand, Ho Yushtein V'Diyuta Achas, if the two porches were on the same side of the street, so Rashi learns that they still do have part of the Rishus HaRabim between them. In other words, what you have is you have one house and then you have the next house. Each one has one of these porches sticking out of it. And you have a part of the Rishus HaRabim between them below down. In other words, when you're going, you have a space between one and the next, and that space is above Rishus HaRabim. So then, HaMoshit Chayev HaZorik Potter. Then the din would be, if a person hands something across from one porch to the other, he's going to be Chayev Chatas, but if he throws something, then he's going to be Potter. And the difference is, Shekach Hoysa Avodah Salavim, because that's how the Levim did it when they were loading up the wagons for the Mishkan. The wagons that we had in last week's parasha that the Nesiim donated to carry the beams and whatnot of the Mishkan. So you had like this. You would have there were 4 wagons altogether, the Pasuk says. The way they arranged them is they had one wagon in front of the other on one side of Mishkan, and then nearby it, a few amas away, they had the other wagon and the other wagon in front of it. So you have the width of Rishus HaRabim is between the 2 rows of wagons, and then you have a little bit of Rishus HaRabim between the one wagon and the other one in front of it. So this is how they would load up the wagons. They would have 2 wagons, one behind the other, in Rishus HaRabim. In other words, you have in each of the 2 rows, 1 wagon closer to the Mishkan and 1 further away. What they would do when they're loading up the wagons, the people who are taking apart the Mishkan would take down a board and they would hand it to the first person. And then the first person on the first wagon would hand it across to the person on the second wagon, and they would load it up over there. But they wouldn't throw the boards from one wagon to the other, Rashi says, because they were heavy. The Yerushalmi actually gives a different reason, because they have Kedusha, and you're not allowed to throw them as a matter of Kedusha. One of them, a poshim in the back of the Gemara called Hagoyes Ben Arya, wants to say that maybe Rashi would agree with that. Maybe the word kovdon in Rashi is supposed to be kvoidon, which means the honor of them. Kovdon means their weight. Maybe it's supposed to be kvoidon, which means their honor. But then he says that not necessarily. Okay. What? So the point is, well, it could be both, yeah. The point is, yeah, the Chassam Sofer actually talks about a certain nafkamina between them. If we say they weren't allowed to throw them because of the Kedusha, then what's the source, Bechlal, that throwing should even be a malacha, which we're going to have to deal with on Omid Beis. And again, Hatzah being a malacha grua, we have to have a source for every detail of it that it should be considered a malacha. Why should throwing Bechlal be a malacha in that case if they weren't even throwing the board? We're going to have to find that out in the Gemara. No, of course they didn't take it apart on Shabbos, but the point is, whatever they did for the Mishkan on weekdays is what becomes a malacha on Shabbos.
You would think that it's worse if you take out the board and pass it across Rishus HaRabim, they would see that none.
So what we're saying is so if they had the 2 rows of wagons, they never had an occasion where they had to pass one board from one wagon to the wagon across from it. which is the equivalent of doing from one porch to the other across the street. But they would pass them from one wagon to the next wagon in front of it, further away from the Mishkan. Therefore, that makes it that when it comes to porches, if you're passing from one porch to the other and passing over Rosh Hashanah Abim, even though you're going higher than 10 amos above, 10 tefachim above Rosh Hashanah Abim, still you're chayim.
Beginning with what, the second what, do twice to go from one wagon to the loading one wagon, the second wagon?
So I saw something suggesting that maybe the idea is if they move around the wagons and already they're starting to travel, and they can't start traveling until the unknown actually starts moving. So therefore, like, they have to have the wagons in place, and therefore, yeah. It's a svara, I don't know. So that's how it was. So therefore, there's a difference between across the street versus side by side. The Rishonim bring from a Baha'i Goyen a slightly different explanation, that it's not really a matter of across the street versus side by side. It's more a matter of the fact that you're handing something from a porch to a porch next to it. He says even if there's not necessarily Rosh Hashanah Abim between them, the fact that the two porches were not connected together with a board before Shabbos, if they were connected by a board, then you'd be allowed to pass things from one to the other, because now they're considered one reshus. And in fact, an Erevin will learn that the Shem Nathan can make one Erev Katseris between the two of them. But if they weren't connected by a board before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to pass boards from one to the other on Shabbos to join them together, in effect.
Erev Katseris has to be like a string of lechi, or can it
be... No, we're talking about the Erev Katseris for challah that you use, yeah.
Yes, so that makes
it one. Well, so you have to have, we'll learn an Erev in Beth Hashem, you have to have that the two places are physically joined, which, yeah, an Erev wire is one way of doing that, but in the case of porches, one way of doing that is that you have a board that goes from one porch to the other, and you're able to walk across on that board.
Or a piece of wood, a small piece of wood, going from one.
Well, whatever, the point is, a piece of wood or something, some kind of bridge.
You have to walk on it,
yeah. So we'll get to that in an Erev in Beth Hashem. Okay. Okay, so therefore, so that's the distinction between throwing versus passing. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Mechti drika tolda dahisayim. Now let's consider, why b'chlal should a person be chayev for drika? Again, given we just said that they didn't really have drika in the Mishkan, we're going to try later on the Amud, we're going to try to find a case where they threw things in the Mishkan, but we're going to end up saying that no. But ultimately, why is it a person is chayev for drika is because the tolda of the malacha of Hatzah, then we have to ask, Hatzah gufa heichaksiva. So where do we find Hatzah itself being considered a malacha? Now, Tosfos says, again, given that it's a malacha grua, we have to have some kind of pasuk to tell us. We can't say when it comes to all the other malachas. We don't need a pasuk to tell us. Let's say, for example, that planting is a malacha, or that plowing is a malacha, or whatever. Because we can infer it ourselves. Once we know that the definition of malacha is anything that was done in order to build the Mishkan, then automatically we realize those kinds of things were done. But Hatzah being a malacha grua, we need a more solid source for it. The Pnei Yeshua gets into a long explanation where he says like this. We actually have a different pasuk, the pasuk Al Yaitse Ishmim, than the one that the Gemara is going to bring over here, that tells us the basic concept of Hitzah. But he says, after all, like we were saying before, there's a difference between carrying something with you, where you're going from one Rishus to another, and the thing is also going with you. But like this, but then you have the kind of Hitzah that doesn't necessarily involve taking yourself from one Rishus to the other. It's more like the kind we had in the first Mishnah of Amasekta, where you're standing in one Rishus and you're passing in through something through the window to the other Rishus or whatever. We have to have some kind of source that's the Malacha in order to then say that Zrika should be a tolda of it. Because if we were to say, he explains, if we were to say that, let's say, it's just the Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, that kind of carrying from one Rishus to another, where you're not moving, only the item is moving, only your hand and the item are moving, if we were to just say that that's the Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, we wouldn't be able to say that it has toldas. In order to say that it has a tolda, we have to learn that kind of carrying itself from a pasuk. So what is that pasuk? Amr of Yechim, the Amr Kura, because they have like this. The Pasuk says, Vayitzav Moshe, Vayavir Kil B'machne. The Pasuk says, Moshe commanded, and they made an announcement in the Machne, in the camp, that everybody should stop bringing things for the Mishkan. So what is it? So what's going on over here? Moshe Heichan Ha'va Yosef. Now, where is Moshe sitting at the time when this announcement is being made? The Machne Leviyah. Moshe is a Levi, so he's living in Machne Leviyah. Or Machne Leviyah, Rosh Hashanah Abim. Now, Machne Leviyah is considered a Rosh Hashanah Abim. Because we know that the famous Machlokes Rishonim, what do you need for something to be considered a Rishus Rabim? Rashi in particular holds that you need 600,000 people coming through it in order for it to be considered a Rishus Rabim. The Machin Leviya is that, because you have the whole Jewish people are always coming to Moshe to ask him Shilas and to learn Torah by him and to come to Dine Torah and so forth. So therefore, you have 600,000 is the number of men among the Jewish people, right? On an ongoing basis, you have, Rashi uses the expression, everybody is always coming to consult with Moshe, and therefore Machna Leviya becomes a Rishus Rabin. So it's one thing, so some of us should say it's different, the Machna Yisrael is not necessarily, the Machna Yisrael may or may not be a Rishus Rabin, because fine, you have each individual Sheva, it's several tens of thousands of people, sure, but you don't necessarily have the camp of Yehuda, let's say, that all the other Shvatim are coming there on a regular basis. But when it comes to Moshe, everybody's coming to him on a regular basis, therefore it becomes a Rishus Rabin. Okay. So Moshe is in Rishus Rabin, but Ka'amal, who is Yisrael, like a pickle, the Taisa, Mershas Yahad, did who? Rishus Rabin. So Moshe is telling them, on Shabbos, do not bring things from your Rishus Yahad, from your tents, which each of your tents or each of your machnas is a Rishus Yahad, into the Machna Levia, which is a Rishus Rabin. So there you go. You have a positive showing that bringing things from Rishus Yochid to Rishus Rabim is a malacha.
But this bringing back and forth was also even before, because Shabbos didn't carry it on Shabbos.
So that's the thing. So the Gemara is going to ask how we know that this is referring to Shabbos. But that's the thing. The Pnei Yeshua is saying, if it's just the basic concept of not carrying on Shabbos, that we know from a pasuk in the parasha of the Mon, or the Yerun Chumash Shmos, where you have, where Moshe tells them, and one of the meanings, besides that it means not according to the Makiva, it means not going outside the Chum, according to the Chum, it means not carrying things from one Rishus to another. Fine, but that's talking about, again, where you're walking from one Rishus to another and carrying the thing with you. Now we're bringing another pasuk from which we can learn that there's also a malacha of transferring something from one Rishus to another, even if you yourself are not going along with it. Just passing it from one Rishus to another. Moshe, as we called it in the Mishnah. And once we have that, then you can have, it can have a tolda, namely Zoda. If we didn't have a pasuk, then we wouldn't have a source for Zoda. Okay. So the question is, we might have a Shabbos koi. Okay, but who says this is talking about on Shabbos? Dilma b'chol koi. Maybe actually this is taking place on weekdays. Maybe Moshe is telling them to stop bringing things on weekdays. Or Mishum b'shlim olam alocha. And he's telling them don't bring it because we have all the material we need for the world. Kedichtiv. As in fact, the pasuk says, the pasuk continues, that the work was enough. So that's it. Moshe told them to stop bringing because they have enough material and they don't need it anymore. So who says it has anything to do with Shabbos? The Gemara says, Gomer ha'avara ha'avara miyom kippurim. Yes, but we learn a Gzeira Shava on the word ha'avara from Yom Kippur. Since the pasuk says, Vayitzav Moshe, Vayaviru, Keil b'machna, they cause to pass an announcement through the camp, that word is there for Gzeira Shava. Then you have a pasuk by Yom Kippur of Yovel, where it says that you should cause the sound of a shofar to pass through Eretz Yisrael, and that's the announcement that all the avodim go free and all the fields return to their owners. So just like on Yom Kippur, we're talking about a day which is also in during Malacha, and we know that because Yom Kippur, we know, the Torah tells us, call Malacha lo yitasu on Yom Kippur. Afkan b'yom also the same way over here. The vayavir kova machna is telling them on a day which is also don't be taking things from your rishus yachid to my rishus rabbin. Tosfos brings a different girsa over here from Rabbeinu Hanano which takes out a couple of these lines, because the question, according to Rabbeinu Hanano, the question was not so much where is a pasuk that we see that there's a concept of haitzah. The question was, where do we see that Hotzah is ever called by the word Malacha? If we find some place where it's called by the word Malacha, then already we have a source to say, okay, anything that's called Malacha in the Torah is also on Shabbos. But where do you have a source for that? And so we're bringing over here from the pasuk by Malacha Hotzah. Since we're talking about carrying things from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, and the pasuk calls it Malacha, then that's enough to tell us that it's a malacha and is also on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ashkechon Hotzah. Okay, so far so good. That tells us that carrying something out from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah is a malacha, and a person is chayav for it on Shabbos. Hachnasa Manolon. What about bringing something in from Rishos Rabim to Rishos Yachid. Again, Hotzah being a Malacha Grua, we need every detail to be spelled out. The answer is Svarim. Okay, at that point we can use a Svarim. Mechti Merishos to Rishos Tu. After all, it is carrying from one Rishos to another. Mali Apuki or Mali Ayuli. So what's the difference whether you're bringing it in or whether you're bringing it out? Either way, it's me'ein of it. Just like every other tool of a malacha is me'ein the original malacha. You're not going to say, for example, because in the Mishkan they only needed to plant and they didn't need to necessarily also prune the plants, let's say, or whatever, or they didn't need to plant. They only needed to plant seeds in the ground, let's say. They didn't need to plant a branch of a tree in the ground. Therefore, you're going to say that's not a malacha. Of course it is. It's similar. It has a similar function. You're causing something to grow. Therefore, it's a malacha. So it's a tolda. So the same thing over here. It has a similar function. It has a similar accomplishment. You have something in one rishus, then you're moving it, and you're moving it to another rishus. Nevertheless, though, still, there is a distinction. Nevertheless, you're right. They didn't actually have Hachnasa when it came to the Mishkan. Therefore, Hitzah counts as an Ab, and Hachnasa counts as a Tolda. Same way as with all the other Malachas. Okay. So the question is, so what's the difference? So Mechti Ahom Chayev Ahom Chayev. So, okay, if any way a person is Chayev, Chathos, or Stila, or what have you, for either one. And we know that because already Rashi says, because already in the first Mishnah of Amasechta, we had the various cases over there involving the Oni and the Balabayas, and we had the case where the Oni stuck his hand into the house and dropped off something over there into the Balabayas' hand. So we said he's Chayev Chatos for it, which means that bringing something in from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yachid is also Chayev Chatos. So in that case, what's the difference? Why bother? Am I Kari Lo Hai Ab? Am I Kari Lo Hai Tolda? So what's the point of calling one an Ab and one a Tolda? What's the difference?
It's not an achnasa you had by Mishkan, because when they built the Mishkan, they brought it in.
What we're saying is, they had in the Mishkan to carry things from Rishus Rabin to Rishus Yachid that they have when they're bringing the donations for the Mishkan to Moshe. We don't have afterwards where they're carrying from Rishus Yachid into Rishus Rabin.
That's it.
Then it's brought to Moshe, and then it's given out to the craftsmen who are doing the work. But the pastor, as the Gemara is going to say soon, they themselves were sitting in Rosh Hashanah and doing their work.
And they never went from when they had to move. They didn't go from
when they're moving from one place to the other. Fine, but then you're breaking up camp. You're taking apart the Mishkan. That's not really taking from Rosh Hashanah from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, because the Rosh Hashanah itself, the walls are being taken down. There's no Rosh Hashanah anymore.
But
you're not carrying anything out at that point. So what's the difference? Why are we calling one an Av and one a Tolda? The Gemara says Nafka Minna. The Nafka Minna between them is like this. The Ovid Shtei Ovid Sahadi Adori. What if a person were to do two different Ovid Malachas at the same time, meaning Behela Mechel? So he didn't know the Shabbos, let's say, or rather, let's say we said in the seventh parish, he didn't know that these are Malachas. So he knew it's Shabbos, let's say, he didn't know your author to plow, and he didn't know your author to plant. And he did both of those things. So then he's going to say, Inam, Ishtei Tuldas Bahadi Adori. Or let's say he did two Tuldas also in the same Helen. So let's say instead of plowing and planting, instead, let's say he watered up. Instead, let's say he dragged a heavy bench on the ground, which is Sikresha, we said, and he watered a plant. So those are both tolders of two respective others. So then mechayev tauchi. Then he's going to be chayev two chatois. The Ovid Ab tolder today, but let's say he does an Ab and a tolder in the same helam, lo mechayev alachod, and then he's only chayev one chatois, which we said before. We said a few times already. That's why in the seventh Perek, when we had the Mishnah about the 39 Malachas, it actually started by saying, Obis Malachas, Aboyim Choser Achas. We had Rabbi Yochanan telling us several times that the point of that, when we could have counted the Malachas in the Mishnah ourselves and arrived at the number 39, the point is to tell us that 39 is the maximum number of Hatois that a person could bring. Even if a person doesn't know that any of the Malachas, the Shabbos, are also, and he does all 39 of them, Behel HaMechad, that's the maximum number of Hatois he could bring, because any more than that, it's just going to be he's doing Tuldas of others. Okay. What about, the Gemara says, Ulur Rabbi Yezer, the Mechayib HaTolder Mokumav. Okay, but what about according to the opinion of Rabbi Yezer, who says in Christus, that a person is chayev a separate chatos for the ab and for the tolda. So according to him, let's say a person planted and watered a plant, he would be chayev two chatos, even though that's an ab and a tolda of the malacha of Zeraya. So according to him, amai kodala ab, amai kodala tolda. So according to him, So according to him, what's the point of mentioning Av and Tula separately? What's the difference between one and the other? The answer is has to avoid the Mishkan Chashiva. The answer is that things that were done in the Mishkan and are considered important malachas that were done in the Mishkan, kari la av, those are called an av. Things that were not done in the Mishkan at all, or that were done and were not important, are not considered an av, they're considered a tolda. So therefore, so Tosfos brings actually two different gerusos over here. Do we mean is that you can have a malacha that was done for the Mishkan, but it's not considered an important malacha? It's just considered another form of doing the same malacha. Or does it mean that anything that was done for the Mishkan is considered an important malacha? Either way, the point is, that's what Rabbi Eliezer would say, that that's the distinction between an av and a tolda. The Tosfos mentions that there is the matter of hasra. You do have to be master in him for the relevant av, but therefore, so that's the difference. If a person is watering a plant, for example, you can't say, don't do that because you're doing the issue of watering a plant and you're going to be chayv skila. We would have to tell him you're doing the malacha of zereya and you're going to be chayv skila. So there is, you have to point out the av malacha that it goes under. By the way, as far as bringing in, by the way, so you were asking that on the face of it, when they broke camp, so Tosfos mentioned such a thing. Tosfos mentions that they did bring the boards up onto the wagon. Isn't that an effect shachnosa? Because the wagons themselves, once they have a layer of boards on them, become a rishos yosid. They're 10 tefachim off the ground, and they're 4x4 tefachim. They had walls, actually. They didn't have a floor, but once you have a layer of boards on them, then you have a floor there. So Tosfos says, fine, granted, but still, we need some kind of source to consider it a tolda, because again, it's a malacha grua, the whole concept of Hitzah is a malacha grua, so therefore we need some solid reason to actually consider it a malacha. And the reason is because of the svara of what's the difference taking in or taking out. Inami, or the Gemara says, getting back to Rabbi Eliezer, again, one distinction is whether it's an important malacha that was done in the Mishkan or not, or inami, or another way of looking at it, hachtichtivi of kari av, something that's written in the pasuk is called an av, b'hai d'loik siv of kari tolda, something that's not written in the pasuk is called a tolda. So therefore, you have, in this case, you have a pasuk that tells us about Hitzah, you don't have a corresponding pasuk that tells us about Achnasa, therefore Achnasa, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, would count as a tolda. Now again, according to him, there's not as much of a nafkamina in halacha, because according to him, if you did Hitzah and Achnasa on Shabbos, you're actually going to be chayav two chatos, even if it was b'hal mechel. But nevertheless, he would still say that Achnasa is called a tolda, because either because not an important malacha or because not actually written in the Mishkan. Next, v'hozitna, and the Gemara says, okay, now let's address, so far, fine, we've dealt with the matter of Hitzah and of Achnasa, now we have to deal with the third kind of transferring things, which is Zrika, throwing, as we talked about in the Mishnah. So v'hozitna, we learn later on in our parak, Hazorik Dalat Amas Bakari. So if a person throws something at 4 Amas or more and it lands on the side of a wall, which we're going to learn later on, we learned in the first parak as well, that we're talking about, let's say over there, it's a juicy fig, so it sticks to the side of the wall. So the Mishnah says, well, my limit, your tefachim, if it lands on the wall more than 10 tefachim above, 10 or more tefachim, more than 10 tefachim above the ground, Kizurta Fa'adr, then it's the equivalent of throwing it into the air, meaning that he's potter, because it landed in Makam Tur, more than 10 tefachim off the ground is Makam Tur. He threw it from the ground. He threw it from the ground, but from Rosh Hashanah. So we have to be talking about it. It traveled less than 4 amas in Rosh Hashanah. Or actually, not necessarily. We're going to talk when we get to this Mishnah on Daf Kuf, we'll talk about whether it actually has to have traveled 4 amas in Rosh Hashanah until that point or not yet. But definitely went from Rosh Hashanah, but it went to Makom Ketur, that's the thing. The wall itself may well be a Rosh Hashanah, may well be a Rosh Hashanah. But Rashi explains, if it landed on top of the wall, then you can talk about, is the wall big enough to be a Rosh Hashanah, or to be a Rosh Hashanah or not. But since it landed on the side of the wall does not have a chshivus of its own to be considered a Rosh Hashanah of its own. So it's a Makom Ketur. So if it lands more than 10 tefachim off the ground, then kizodik father, it's like he threw it into the air, and therefore he's potter, because it didn't land in another rishus. L'matim yud tefachim kizodik father, if he throws it and it lands within 10 tefachim of the ground, on the side of the wall, then it's like he threw it onto the ground, therefore he's chayev. And the Mishnah continues, and if a person throws something for Amos in Rosh Hashanah Abim, he's also Chayev. So in other words, again, in the previous case, it doesn't matter whether there was, in the previous case, if he threw it and it landed above 10 tefachim from the ground, so it doesn't really matter if it had landed in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, it wouldn't matter whether it had traveled four amas or not. Transferring something or throwing something from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah Yachid is chayiv even if less than four amas. So here we're talking about, in other words, again, because the face of the wall above 10 tefachim is makim tur, that's what makes him potter. That's what makes him potter. But if it was below 10 tefachim and it traveled 4 amos, then he's chayav because he threw from one place to another. And it's just an avim that went 4 amos. And even though it didn't land in Makom Tur, if it's below 10 tefachim, it's just an avim. And also, if he throws 10 tefachim, if he throws 4 amos along the ground, then also he's chayav. And that, right. So now the question is, Zorak Dalan Amos v'Shoset Abim Menolan. So where do we get that if a person throws something four Amos in V'Shoset Abim, they should be Chayav? Again, Malacha Grua, so we need a source for everything. So where do we find throwing in the Mishnah? We said in the Mishnah they didn't throw the boards because they're heavy or because it's not respectful to throw them. So where do they have throwing in the Mishnah that we should be Mechayav the person for that? Amar Rabbi Yoshiya Shekein Urge Yuriyas Zorken Machpeyan Zelazet. So Rabbi Yoshiya says, because the people who are weaving the curtains throw their needles to each other. What do you mean? Weaving doesn't involve needles. Sewing involves needles. So there's a, what are you using the expression? The ones who are weaving the curtains, they don't need needle. They don't need needles in the first place. They use a loom. So they use a loom. So they don't use a needle in the course of weaving. Okay, but you have the people who are sewing the curtain, throw them one to the other. Meaning, Rashi says, there were some of the curtains that had embroidery done on them. Now, you had different kinds of curtains in the Mishkan. Some of them were Masei Oreg. Some of them were, they had a design that was woven into the cloth to begin with. So like you have nowadays, you have cloth that's made with patterns. See, this is more like embroidery. This is after the cloth is woven, they apply a design to it. Then you have the cloth itself can be woven with a design in it. Like you have, for example, my shirt over here has stripes in it. They're not applied after the shirt is woven. When the shirt is being woven, or your shirt also is woven in a pattern to begin with. So you had some of the curtains in the Mishkan were made like that. They had a pattern of kruvim and lions and whatever that was woven into the cloth to begin with. So you'd have at some point, in weaving each row, they would stop using one eight of thread and use a different color eight of thread to make a pattern, and then go back to the original one and go back and forth like that. And then you had ones where the design was embroidered onto it afterwards. Masei roikim, it's called. So Rashi says in that case, for that they need needles for embroidery. They need needles.
Oh, bring me to actually attach it.
Means that they sew on a design onto the side of the cloth after they're finished making the cloth itself. Right, the other one you see from both sides is woven into the cloth, right. Yeah. The Rashash points out also you could have, with the Pasuk tells us that the curtains of the Mishkan were made in groups of five, or in the Yiriyah season, a group of five and a group of six, and each group was sewn together with stitches. So there you also have where stitching is used and they're using needles. So if one of them needs a needle, then the other one would throw it, to them. So the question is, V'dilma gabe hadodi habayasri. Okay, who says they would have to throw it? Maybe they're sitting close enough together that they could just hand it. The answer is if they're sitting too close together, then they're going to bump into each other when they're doing their needles. Because in the course of sewing, you have at some point during the sewing or the embroidery or whatever, you have to pull the needle, you have to pull the thread tightly out in order to tighten it to make the stitching is good. So then if you're doing like that, you're going to bang into the guy next to you if you're sitting too close together.
But you're supposed to be close on the fast.
But that's the question is.
They didn't practice social distancing.
Well, yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah. And practice social distancing. So that's the question. Dilma says, Arba Abayasmi. Okay, maybe they're within four amas of each other. So they're far enough apart that they're not going to bang into each other when they're pulling the needle and the thread out. Okay. But they're still close enough. But they're still close enough that if they're throwing it, it's less than four amas. Where do we see that throwing four amas is a malacha? They weren't necessarily more than four amas apart. Well, that depends on what kind of sewing. Maybe that's why Rashi points out that you're talking about embroidery over here, where it's not just sewing fine, I mean, it is sewing fine stitches, but it's also, at some point, you have to tighten the thread, and you have to pull like this in order to get it tight. Yeah. Okay, so So who says they were sitting more than 4 amas apart? Maybe they were sitting within 4 amas. And in that case, if you're going to say that's based on throwing, that's based on they threw needles one to the other, then in that case, then you should be chayav for throwing less than 4 amas also. Next. Okay, so the Gemara says you're right. Ela omer of chista, fine. That's not a source for throwing. Let's say they didn't throw the needles to each other. They would pass them to each other if they needed. But rather, shken oyrig yirias zirken buchya bayiria. Because the ones who are weaving the curtains would throw the shuttle through the curtain as they're weaving it. As we discussed before, when we were discussing the malacha, when we were discussing the malachas involved in weaving, we said the setup is over there that you have a loom, you have the chassis threads are stretched out parallel to each other. One end of them is wound around one roller, the other end around another roller. In the middle, you have two frames where the frames have loops in them. And the odd-numbered threads pass through the odd-numbered loops, and the even-numbered threads pass through the even-numbered loops. And then that way, when you're weaving, you lift up one frame, half the threads go along with it, and now you have a space between the two sets of threads. In English, it's called a shed. And then you pass the 8 of thread through that shed, and then you have a new row of your floor. Then you put down the one frame, pick up the other one, and you go and you do back when you do back in the other direction with the 8 of thread, and so you keep on going like that, raising and lowering the frame and passing the 8 of back and forth through the shed. The point is, you don't actually pass it through. What you do is you throw it through. As we've learned before, the 8 of thread is wound around a spool, which is the spool is placed within something which we called before an ira, which was like a hollow stick or something, where we cap the end of it with a piece of cloth or something and leave a little hole for the thread to come out of. So you're throwing this shuttle. It's called buchya in Aramaic. You throw the buchya back and forth. So you raise one frame, you throw the buchya in this direction, then you raise the other frame and you throw the buchya back in the other direction, and more thread comes out of it. More and more thread rolls off the spool and goes into the cloth that you're weaving. So therefore, that's what we're doing. They're throwing the buchya back and forth as they're weaving. So the question is, how can that be considered throwing? You have the 8 of thread is attached. The 8 of thread is still attached. So throwing something means that you're throwing it and it's completely out of your hand. There's nothing left attached to it. Here you have it attached. Okay, the answer is beniska basra. Okay, but let's say eventually you come to the end of the spool. When you throw the buchya the last time and the last piece of 8 of thread comes off the spool, at that point there's nothing attached anymore. No, you don't. That's the point. You have the thread is eventually you have to cut the finished cloth off the loom. That's not what we're talking about over here. That's a separate malacha, paiseya. But what we're talking about over here is as you're throwing this buchya, this shuttle back and forth and weaving the cloth, eventually you come to a point where the thread on the spool in the buchya runs out. At that point, that last time you throw it, then the buchya comes free and goes. And then you pick it up and then put a new and open it up and put new thread on the spool and continue from there.
The last thing you're throwing it is someone has to catch it. Or
maybe it just falls on the ground and you catch it and you go and pick it up. Whatever, the point remains that then you have a throwing which is not attached anymore because it's not attached because the last thread is gone from it. The reason why we're saying is because the curtains themselves were 4 amas wide. The curtains, each curtain of the Mishkan was 4 amas wide, and then the ones that went over the Mishkan itself, the Urias, the ones of Chelas, Vagom, and Telas Shani, and the ones of goat hair, they were all 4 amas wide. So yeah, when you're throwing the book here, necessarily it's going 4 amas at a time. 4 amas would be, depending who you ask, anywhere between about 6 and 8 feet. Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah makes it about 6 feet. The Chazanish makes it about 8 feet. So yeah, this table would be just about 4 amas, I guess, yeah. This table would be just about 4 amas, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah. According to the Chazanish, it would go out to around here, let's say.
It would be very hard to pass something in 4 ounces.
So that's what we're saying. They would throw the book here, yeah. Okay, the problem with that is, what do you mean, though? That as the shuttle is going back and forth in the cloth, it's going through a mokum p'tur. Because you don't have it. It's going between. You have the one set of threads. You have the other set of threads. The area between them is a mokum p'tur. It's not a rishus rabim. It's not four tefachim wide to be considered a rishus. So therefore, it's mokum p'tur. Other rishonim learn. I think the Rashba says that, okay, maybe it's not a true makom tur, but it would be a karmelist at least. It certainly wouldn't be a shesed abim when you have the two sides of the cloth, the two sets of threads coming in on both sides of it.
And they're doing this outdoors.
Fine, but still, the area between the sets of threads would be a makom tur, or karmelist as the case may be. Now, how do you have, you're talking about throwing four amos in your shesed abim. So that doesn't work. Ella, no, you have to say like this. The reason why it's throwing, there's a malacha, she can urge Yerias, Zokin, Bukhyo, the Shayalehan. Because you have, if somebody else needs to borrow a shuttle, you have a few different people are weaving different curtains. So you have, let's say one of them doesn't have a shuttle right now, so he borrows one from the other one, and the other one will throw it to him. But on the side of it, it brings a different girsa from the Aruch, that the word is actually the Shavalehan, meaning to their assistant. So they would throw the spool, like after they finished, after they've done one thing of weaving and they ran out of eight of thread, then they would throw the shuttle to their assistants, here, put more thread on the shuttle so we can continue weaving. So then they're throwing it. So again, the question is, who says that these people are sitting far enough apart, 4 amas apart, that they have to throw it one to the other? Maybe they're sitting close to each other.
No, the guy's walking back and forth to help out.
Well, but okay, the other guy, the helper, may be doing something else. He himself, meanwhile, in between, he's not sitting there the whole time waiting for you to give him a shuttle. Meanwhile, he's doing some of the weaving himself on another loom or something. But who says he's as much as 4 amas away? And again, the answer is Motu Adadi Bechefes. Same idea as before, that when they're stretching out the Eder thread to make sure that it's tight, to make sure that it's nicely and tightly woven, if they're too close together, they're going to bump into each other with their hands as they're doing that. So again, the question is, again, first of all, Tosfos says, the Gemara could have asked again, that maybe they're within 4 amas of each other, so therefore they're far enough apart not to bang their hands into each other, but still close enough that they don't have to throw it. But also, the Gemara is saying, maybe they weren't sitting next to each other, maybe they were sitting staggered. So you have, let's say, one guy sits over here, let's say. The other guy sits within 4 amas from him, but a little bit behind him. And the next one like that, like they go diagonally, let's say. So therefore you have, they're within 4 amas. They're close enough, they are sitting fairly close to each other, but each one has space around them, so they're not going to bump into each other as they're doing their work. So who says they were actually sitting 4 amas apart? The two Misha Ilim Adadi. And anyway, we have to ask, B'chlau, when these people are doing all the weaving of the curtains, or any of the malachas of the Mishkan, are they borrowing materials from each other? V'hatanya Luda, but Luda taught a b'raita, Luda, that's his name, the name of a chacham. When the pasuk says ish memalachta shehema osim, the pasuk says that each one came from his work that they were doing, and they came to Moshe and said, "We have enough material already." Meaning memalachta hu osa, veina osim memalachas chaverim. Each one is doing his own work; he doesn't have to do somebody else's work. Everybody had all of their tools that they need to do their job. Nobody had to borrow from each other. So what do you mean they don't have to be borrowing needles or shuttles or whatever from each other? The two, and besides that, anyway, if you're going to say that the malacha of Zrika were learning from the way they threw these things to each other in the Mishkan, in that case, where would you have a source that if a person carries something 4 amas in Rosh Hashanah, he should be chayev? That we're not finding any source for. Ella, no, the bottom line is, kol dalat amas, Rosh Hashanah, gemara gemurimah. This, that any way that a person transfers something in 4 amas to these chayev, is all gemara gemurimah. We learn it with Kabbalah. We learn it as part of Torah Shabbat. What? Or something like that. Yeah. So there's taka, no source. They didn't do any throwing in the Mishkan, but nevertheless, it still involves transferring something from one place to the other in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore it's a part of the halacha that a person is chayav for that. And again, as we said before, it would be a tulda of Hitzah. Once we establish that there is a malach of Hitzah, and once we have, as the Pnei Yehoshua pointed out, two different psukim for it, one that talks about where you're carrying it with you, and one that talks about where you're transferring it from point A to point B without you carrying it with you, then already we can include Zrika in that, which is also similarly where you're transferring it from point A to point B without you yourself going with it. Okay. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Now let's talk about, we have in Parashat Shlach, we have in, for the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, this is now the Parashat of the week. For us it's next week. the Mekoshesh Eitzim that sells over there. And they found the Mekoshesh Eitzim. They brought him to Moshe, and Hashem tells Moshe that the guy's high mitzvah for breaking Shabbos. So what was the actual malacha that he did? His malacha was that he carried four amas or more in Rishas Rabbah. Because when he was gathering these sticks, the Masnif Tana Toila Shabbah, a Braisa says that the malacha he was doing was pulling them out of the ground, because the Braisa, in other words, learned that these sticks were attached to the ground, and he detached them in order to collect them. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says it was a different malacha that he was doing. He was gathering together. We have the fourth malacha on the list in the seventh parak was ma'amer, where you're gathering together. For example, the classic form of the malacha is you're bundling together sheaves of grain in order to make them into a bundle, and that's a malacha. So over here, he's bundling together a bunch of sticks, which is a malacha. Okay, what's the practical difference? He was doing a malacha. Well, we know there are 39 malachas. Who cares what particular malacha he was doing? The answer is lachidir Rav. The Nachmina is regarding what Rav says. The Amar Rav, Matsosi Megillas Sorin Dei Rav Chiya. Rav says, we learned this in the first parak, that I found a hidden Megillah in the house of Rav Chiya. Now, what it is this is during the time when you weren't allowed yet to write down Torah Shabbat Peh. But you were allowed, in all the generations, you were allowed to write down something of Torah Shabbat Peh as private notes for yourself so you don't forget it. You're just not allowed to teach Torah Shabbat Peh from a written text until Rebbe composed the Mishnah and later Eitz Bas Hashem and so forth. And from then on, it became mutter to write Torah Shabbat Peh. So before that, you had only these Megillah Sodom. You had these hidden Megillahs, which a person would write down for themselves, but he wasn't allowed to be teaching them to other people. It's worth, by the way, an interesting thing. It says about Rav Nosson Adler, one of the Rebbeim of the Chassam Sofer, that he didn't write down any of his Chiddushei Torah. And in fact, unfortunately, we have very little of what he wrote. Because he said, if the whole heter is because you might forget it, he had a perfect memory, that he's not worried about forgetting it, so therefore he said he felt he didn't have any heter to write down his Chiddushim. So we have scattered here and there, we have things occasionally that Chassam Sofer quotes from him, things that his other Talmidim quote from him, but very little.
So
most of it is lost, unfortunately, yeah.
Didn't write it down, yeah.
Okay, anyway. The Rav says, I found a Megillah Sodom in the house of Rav Chiya, who was also Rav's uncle. The Kosu Ben, it says in this Megillah Sodom, Isi Ben Yehuda Oma Ovis Malachas Aboim Kosarach. Isi Ben Yehuda says that there are 40 minus 1 Ovis Malachas, 39 Ovis Malachas, as we've learned before. And we take out the part in parenthesis over here, this isn't really relevant. The Enechayev El Acha. He's only chayav one. Now, what does that mean? Achas v'tuloy. What does that mean? If a person does all these malachas, he's only chayav one chachas. Well, tnan avos malachas haboim chaser achas. We said in the seventh parak that there were 39 avos malachas. V'havinan bo, and we asked about it. We mentioned this before on the Amud. Minyan olamali. Why does the mission need to tell us the number? We can count the malachas ourselves and find that there are 39. Rav Yechanan Shem Asan Kolam Behelam Echad Chayv Akolachas Achas. Rav Yechanan says the point is to tell us that if a person does all these malachas, Behelam Echad is going to be Chayv 39 Chatoz. But as we said before, no more than that, because according to the Chachamim, if you do a Tulda, then you're not Chayv a separate Av Malacha, but you're not Chayv a separate Chatoz from the Av Malacha. Now, the Pashtus Isi Ben Yehuda agrees with that concept. Especially Tosfos says, it could be earlier in the Masechta, we quoted this, since he himself also mentions the number, Aboim Chaser Achas, it must mean that he also agrees with this concept of 39 Chasers. So what does he mean, the expression, Eine Chayv Ala Achas is only Chayv one Chasers? No, Eima, you have to correct the wording, Eine Chayv Al Achas Mehem. He's not Chayv for one of them. There's one of these 39 Malachas for which he is not going to be Chayv. Yeah, some Rishonim learn that it means he's not going to be Chayv Skila, but he would still be Chayv Achatas. Others learn that it means that he wouldn't be Chayv Achatas either, according to Yisib any order. Anyway, so any Chayv Al-Achas man, he's not Chayv for one of them. So now the question is, which is that one Malacha that is different than all the other ones for which a person is not going to be Chayv Skila, or Chayv Achatas, as the case may be? So Rav Yehuda Pshitalei Dehamar Chayv, Rav Yehuda says, I know for a fact that carrying four amas in the Shasar Abim is a malacha that a person is chayav skila for. Therefore, the Mekoshesh Eitzim did that malacha, and therefore Hashem said to Moshe that he's chayav skila for it. The Braita knew for a fact that one of the 38 malachas for which a person is chayav skila is toilish. So therefore, the Braita said that that's what he did. He uprooted the plants from the ground and was collecting them. Rav Acha bar Yaakov pshitla d'ma'amar chayav. Rav Acha bar Yaakov knows for a fact that ma'amar is one of the 38. So each one of them is saying the malacha that I'm saying the Makoshish did is definitely not one of the, is definitely not the malacha that that Issi ben Yehuda is talking about that a person would be pulled from skill for.
What's the
ma'amar means gathering together. Like you have, for example, you harvested grain and now it's lying on the ground and now you gather it up together to make bundles, to make sheaves. So that's one of Abba's malacha. So in this case, Rav Acha bar Yaakov is saying that that's what the Makoshish did. He found a bunch of sticks lying around on the ground. He didn't cut them from the ground. But he gathered them together into a bundle, and that itself is a malacha. Which, by the way, we learned in the seventh parak that ma'amar only applies to gedulei karka. It doesn't apply to things that don't grow from the ground. So let's say, so one example of it is, if you have, let's say you have a basket of fruit, let's say, that's scattered on the floor, you're not allowed to pick them up on Shabbos and put them back into the basket, because that would be ma'amar. But if, let's say, instead of a bunch of fruit, let's say you had a bunch of toys that fell out, then you would be allowed to gather them up in the basket. So that was the example we actually gave over there in the seventh set. Salt you're allowed to, because not considered good like house. So therefore, so all it is Mar Sava Homia Slamasapa or Mar Sava Homia Slamasapa. In other words, these three opinions, each one is saying, we have a suffix. Which malacha did Issi ben Yehuda mean when he said that one of them is not chayav skila for? But one of them is saying, I know for a fact that that's not the malacha of Aitzah. And another one is saying, I know for a fact it's not the malacha of Turlish, which is a tool of Kotzer. And another one says, I know for a fact that it's not the malacha of Ma'am. So, for example, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it might be that a person is not high of skill, according to Issi ben Yehuda, for plowing. It might be he's not high for planting. It might be he's not high for harvesting, etc., etc. But I know for a fact that a person, even according to Issi ben Yehuda, a person is high of skill for carrying. And the same thing with the other two opinions. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, and we'll have some agadta about the Makoshish and about some other things, including something in this week's parsha.
Thank you.
I was going to say, give me a bracha that I can.